Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
So we're covering the book of Job in the adult class in here. And we've had Brother JB's done a great job kind of getting us oriented in the book of Job and giving us, setting up the scene, discussing how Satan wanted to, that God permitted Satan to test Job. And so, and then Ben did last week, he covered Eliphaz's first speech, and well, Eliphaz's speeches, and then this week we are going to cover Bildad the Shuhite. So we don't know much about Bildad, except outside of the speeches he offers his friend Job. You know, his name, you know, this is a first for me, so bear with me if you've heard this, but he is the shortest guy in the Bible, from what I heard. He's far shorter than Zacchaeus. This is one thing that we know, being Bildad, the Shuhite fellow. So, I know that, like, that was new to me. I didn't hear that, but apparently that's an old joke that's been going around for years, so. But so that my father-in-law pointed that out to me, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that's good. I'll have to bring that one up." But anyways, but other than that, we know that he is believed to be a descendant of Abraham through Abraham's concubine Keturah, and we read in 1 Chronicles 1:32 that Keturah had a son named Shuha, which is believed that would be the Shuha of the Shuhite side of Bildad the Shuhite. It's speculative, but there's maybe something there. But anyway, so Bildad starts right where Eliphaz left off, and he's addressing Job, denying that he is unrighteous. You know, Bildad goes right after Job's 10 kids, and then we're going to kind of think about some things about what's Bildad basing his assumption of Job's children on. And so, before we hit Bildad's speech, though, I'd like to take a few key points from Job's response to Eliphaz, because I think that'll kind of set up how Bildad attacks or kind of goes after Job, and it'll kind of give us some insight into where Job's at in this, and then we'll look at Bildad and kind of unpack a few of the things he said, some of his arguments, some of the things, as Ben points out, they say some things, they sprinkle some truths in there, but then there's a lot of stuff that's just really, really wrong that we want to really make sure we call out. And also to think about ways that we as Christians can, and you know, as we look at Job, there's so many things that we can learn and apply to our own lives. And as Christians, what can we learn from these speeches in terms of, and I think one of the best things we can learn is what not to do in a lot of ways, and how you're approaching somebody that's suffering, somebody that's going through struggles or a tragedy, things like that. So I'd really like to spend a little bit of time on that tonight as we go through Bildad's speech. But first, so let's look in chapters. Let's begin in chapter 6 of Job, and we're going to look at Job's response to Eliphaz, and that's in chapter 6 and 7. But we're just going to unpack a few verses in chapter 6, and then we'll move on down, and then we'll kind of just move into chapter 8 and start going through Bildad's first speech. And we'll spend probably the majority of the time there, just because that's one of his longest thoughts, and he kind of, you know, just reiterates some of the points he makes in chapter 8, later on in 18 and chapter 25. So, chapter 6, Job chapter 6, beginning in verse 1, it reads, "And Job answered and said, 'Oh, that my grief were fully weighed, and my calamity laid with it on the scales. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words have been rash. For the arrows of the Almighty are within me. My spirit drinks in their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me. Does the wild donkey bray when it has grass, or does the ox low over its fodder? Can flavorless food be eaten without salt, or is there any taste in the white of an egg? My soul refuses to touch them. They are loathsome food to me. Oh, that I might have my request, that God would grant me the thing that I long for, that it would please God to crush me, that he would loose his hand and cut me off. You know, Job is, he's justifying all of his bitter words, and he's also, again, reaffirming his desire to die here. You know, but I love how he talks about, if my grief were fully weighed and my calamity laid on the scales would be heavier than the sands of the sea. And he is just really articulating his pain here, the suffering that he has endured. And one of the things, when I just look at Job and God in his infinite wisdom allowing Job to be tested the way he has, and I've told this to some of the people I've spoke with, as I've, you know, I just love thinking about Job. You look at what Job endured in a very short time. And, you know, this is the way I always look at, you know, Job. It's what he endured in a very short time is multiple lifetimes of suffering all in a matter of moments. Most people, when they suffer, they can look at what they're going through. They lose their health. Well, they still have their kids a lot of times, or they still have their family. They lose their wealth. Well, they still have their wife, their kids. That's okay. You know, so you look at any of these one things and the other kind of shores it up. You lose your health. Well, I got a lot of money and resources where I can get the best doctors, the best treatment, and I can try to make things better. Job lost it all. And then he's capturing that with talking about, you know, his grief. If it were fully weighed and his calamity laid on the scales, it would be heavier than the sands of the sea. He's justifying himself here, and he's talking about how he feels so unjustly, suffering. So then he continues on in verse 14, of chapter 6, he talks about, to him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. He's basically kind of hitting how his friends are not showing him the kindness that he deserves at this point. He is really in a bad place. Then it continues in chapter 6, verse 24. I just want to read this little excerpt, then we're going to get into Bildad's speech. Teach me, and I will hold my tongue. Cause me to understand where I have erred. How forceful are right words. But what does your arguing prove? Do you intend to rebuke my words and the speeches of the desperate one, which are as wind? Yes, you overwhelm the fatherless, and you undermine your friend. Now, therefore, be pleased to look at me, for I would never lie to your face. Yield now. Let there be no injustice. Yes, concede my righteousness still stands. Is there injustice on my tongue? Cannot my taste discern the unsavory? So here he's basically just defending his righteousness here to his friends and, you know, basically rebutting, you know, Eliphaz here. So let's get into Bildad's speech now and see how he responds to this, to Job here as we continue. So chapter, and we'll just go move on down to chapter 8. There's some really good stuff in chapter 7 too. If you have time, take a moment to skim over that. I do love some of the points he makes in chapter 7. I didn't want to cover too much of the response because I know that we have some other time allocated in this class to cover Job's responses too throughout two more classes later in the quarter. So let's move into chapter 8. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, how long will you speak these things? Are the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? So Bildad just thinks Job's rambling on. He's not really listening to what he's saying. He's not really taking in the words that he's saying. If he really was listening to him, he wouldn't have come at him like this. It's really hard to believe that nothing that Job said really sunk into Bildad. He just feels so strongly, and we're going to talk about that, so strongly that Job is unrighteous and that there is no way he would be suffering like this if it was not for him being unrighteous and that God's justice is allowing this. So look at verse 3 now. Does God subvert judgment or does the Almighty pervert justice? So Bildad now defends God's justice, and, you know, he's correct in defending God's justice. God is sovereign. God is just. He knows everything. And as we think about this, and we have the luxury of seeing the conversation that occurred before all of Job's temptations, but, you know, Bildad is incorrect in assuming that God's justice is always executed here on the earth in that regard. Think with me. So, you know, in Matthew 5:45, Jesus makes the point on in the Sermon on the Mount. He makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. And this is a response to telling us to love our enemies. But then in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7, we also read, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." So what I want us to think about is, how do you reconcile these two thoughts? And I mean, I think there's a lot of good explanations for this, but I want to leave and get some input from you guys. Because I look around and I see people that have endured much more suffering, life experiences, time, experiencing God's word, meditation on the Holy Word. Anybody have any thoughts or points you want to make at this point? Okay, so we're talking about, how do we reconcile the two thoughts? Where God makes the sun rise on the evil and on the good, sends rain on the just and the unjust. You know, I mean, clearly, the earth isn't our only consideration here. If it was, how would Hollywood even exist if he was going to punish right here on this earth with all the blasphemy that they do? The stuff that, I mean, I've turned shows on where I'm like, it makes me cringe for the second that I watch it. I don't understand. Yes, sir, you had a point? Yes. So, I'm sorry? I will try to, and I'm going to learn my lesson. I'm just going to give him my mic next time, because that was such a great great thought. So, and I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Mark, nice to meet you, Mark. I'm Nate. So Mark's making the point, it's God's providence about how the rain falls on the just and unjust. And without God's providence, how would we, you know, we don't know in exactly when God's providence is at hand, but we just know that we trust in God, that he's providing for us. And, you know, the fact that rain is falling on the just and unjust is providing for us as well. And, and I wish I could have remembered you had a quotation from about David. And
David said, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your law." And mm-hmm. A lot of people look at it. That's really the story of how they came to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They began looking for something because something was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and so again, okay, how do we know in the Christian age, mm-hmm. how do we know whether or not something happened?
Oh, we got a mic coming, But you know, he makes the point that David said, "Before I was afflicted, I went astray." So that's one of the things. I mean, like, there's so many people in here that will make some that will have experiences where they did suffer and they came to Christ as a result of that, and so that's a great thing when that does occur, for sure. But also too, you know, we want the ultimately though. The ultimate level set, though, of God's justice is the judgment too, though, and we're whatever gets us. And I've always looked at, you know, in terms of the Lord working in my life, either through providence or allowing me to be tested through trials. Whatever makes us better to get us to heaven, I am thankful for. And but the earth is definitely not our only consideration when we think about. Suffering and God's justice being enacted on this earth. But Bildad is going through, and that's what I want to talk about, is he's put the blinders on, and he is like, God's suffering is happening. This is God's justice. Yes, Glenn. Here, I'll get the mic. I'll get it to you.
I have a green mic, but anyway.
Chris, okay, I'll try to paraphrase it as we go.
What I was going to say is, and you might not want to comment on this, but does this demonstrate a weakness in the patriarchal age and the fact that Bildad is, he's misrepresenting God. And so he says it in verse 3, does God subvert judgment or does the Almighty pervert justice? And so, of course, we would say no. They would say no to that. But isn't it interesting that there wasn't a written word to which they could go and say, to which Job could point and say, well, of course, what you're saying is wrong. I mean, he's saying, I am faithful. And I don't know. It's just interesting that Jesus in defending himself from the devil, started by saying, it is written. And that's how he stood for what's right and how much we depend on the written word that they did not have.
Yes, and I think that's exactly leads us right into our next point. And here, I'll go ahead and put that over here so I can hopefully run and get it to whoever needs it next. But, you know, so let's move on to that. So the fact, and Vin kind of touched on this last week, how do you argue with somebody that says, you know, the Lord's talking to him? But he, I mean, Eliphaz is going to the wisdom of the ancients. And let's go into verse 4, and we'll read a little excerpt here, and then we'll get on, move on from that. So 4 through 7, does God's, if your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. If you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely he would awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Though your beginning was small, your latter end would increase abundantly. And I was actually getting ahead of myself. I'm thinking of verse 8. And so we'll get into that in just a moment. You know, but Bildad goes right after Job's children. You know, he's plainly asserting that Job's children are unrighteous. And that is exactly what they're getting their... They're what they deserve. And he's trying to get Job to see God. And then now let's continue on and let's just read verse 8 through 19. And this is going to kind of set up, you know, where he's getting his wisdom from and where he's you know, and he's whether part of it he is warping, you know, because like Glenn was pointing out, like this is, we're in the patriarchal age, and so he's getting his wisdom from the ancient traditions, and so let's continue on and just read and let him speak here in the speech. For inquire, please, of the former age, and consider the things discovered by their fathers. And so some talk about this being traditions, some talk about this, how this is the wisdom passed down. For we were born yesterday and know nothing, because our days on this earth are a shadow. So again, he's talking about how we don't know much because this is our short lifespan, but, you know, we appeal to all the years of experience that have been filed away for us. Will they not teach you and tell you and utter words from their hearts? Can the papyrus grow up without a marsh? Can the reeds flourish without water? While it is yet green and not cut down, it withers before any other plant. So are the paths of all who forget God. And the hope of the hypocrite shall perish, whose confidence shall be cut off, and whose trust is a spider web. He leans on his house, but it does not stand. He holds it fast, but it does not endure. He grows green in the sun, and the branches spread out in his garden. His roots wrap around the rock heap, and look for a place in the stones. If he is destroyed from his place, then it will deny him, saying, "I have not seen you." So Bildad is appealing Job to trust in the traditions or the wisdom of his ancestors. One thing that I think is just, because you look at what these guys are doing and you think, are they trying to comfort Job? Or are they trying to reach Job? Or are they trying to, do they feel like there's wrong? They clearly feel like there's wrong in Job's life and this is the way they need to go about doing things. But he is appealing to Job to trust in the traditions of his ancestors. And let's just finish out the chapter for just a second. And then I want to, you know, kind of go back to that, the thought of what Bildad is saying to Job and trusting the traditions of the ancestors. And so, behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. He will yet fill your mouth with laughing and your lips with rejoicing. Those who hate you will be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked will come to nothing. So Bildad finishes again with this thesis that God, you know, in his justice, will not cast away a good man, implying you are not good. You are not good, Job. So, you know, and Brother JB kind of hit on this, but as we're thinking about, and this is one of the things I think is a real pearl or, you know, gem we can get out of, you know, as we're looking at the book of Job and looking at the three friends and their speeches, because there's going to be a lot of thoughts that are going to be, you know, we can look at different angles on. It's hard to truly empathize with someone that has just endured a tragedy, a terrible tragedy like this. And, you know, so Bildad, it seems that he's making no attempt to do that at this point. Job said some pretty heavy things. He didn't listen to him at all. But you look at why. Why? Where did Bildad make the misstep? Where did it kind of break down for him? And, you know, ultimately he was incorrectly judging Job and his children. He was basing this off the thesis that God would not allow this to happen. If he was righteous, this wouldn't happen. So I'm going to judge that you are unrighteous. And so, you know, when we think about empathizing with somebody that's going through a terrible tragedy, I'm going to tell you something. When I hear something really bad happen, this may just be me, maybe it's not anybody else, but if it's just me, where's the first thing we go to, or at least I go to, when something really bad happens? Well, how did it happen? Isn't that, like, that's the news pretty much. I mean, what are we doing with this whole collapse of the building in Florida? Well, what happened? How did it happen? And by implication, though, then, somebody did something wrong. Somebody messed up, and they're getting their just dessert. I mean, that's what's going on there. Now, granted, we know that there's innocent people there, but somebody messed up. You know, so what I want us to think about is how it's easy sometimes to get caught up in that. And it's not necessarily as egregious as what Bildad's doing to Job, but it can be something that limits our ability to truly empathize with somebody suffering. You know, think for just a minute as we consider this. You know, incorrect spiritual judgment. You know, if you say, you know, to be clear, you know, we know some unrighteousness will cause suffering on this earth. That is just true. If I'm an alcoholic, I may alienate every single familial relationship I have on this earth. If I do drugs, I may ruin my life, my health, lose my job, my wealth. It's immoral, and it also causes pain, and I will suffer as a function of that, which will cause that. But we can never get to the place where we see all suffering as a function of a person's goodness or righteousness. And, you know, because just as we're looking at Job, because, you know, you can do this on an unconscious level. What happens then when you suffer? You're doing your best to live the righteous life. You're praying about, and you know the Lord is providing for you, but then something happens and you're suffering. If you are making some correlation there that you won't suffer because you're righteous, it's going to hurt you more. It's going to hurt. But the other thing I want us to talk about too is there's some things that are not even immoral that will be physical and people will suffer from. You make, some physical suffering is a direct consequence of maybe some poor decisions. But we can never get to the place where we see all suffering as a function of a person's ability to make right decisions. Sometimes living in a fallen world will cause bad things to happen to good people. And so as we think about how Bildad was incorrectly judging Job's children, I'm thinking about, like, what would be the modern day equivalent of that? We would say, well, you know, if they would have tied the tent down better, that wind wouldn't have blown it, you know. And, you know, we would start unpacking that and start seeing, like, all these physical reasons. Well, we need better, you know, laws and stuff regulating how tents are erected and things like that. You know, we think about these things, and then in the process of doing that, we don't realize how we're just avoiding the tragedy. We want to, and what I want to think about is, we do that because it makes us feel safe. It won't happen to us if we figure out why it happened. And that's really the point I want to make with this, is it makes us feel safe sometimes, and limits our ability to really empathize with our brothers and sisters if we can point to something. Whether it be spiritual, oh, they did something wrong. I'm not going to live my life like that. Or whether it be physical, well, you know, I mean, because how awful would it be for you hear about a family member, or not family member, a friend lose a kid to a car accident. Well, you say, were they texting and driving? Were they speeding? Does that warrant what that poor person is enduring? No, it doesn't. It is not just. It's the fact that we live in a fallen world. It's sin and death that caused that suffering. Ultimately, that, you know, we can't, it's not fair. Now we need to teach our kids and things of consequences of those types of things that are serious. But, you know, just like Bildad is going after Job's children right here, we would never imagine to do something like that. To go after, when we're talking to somebody, you know, your kid did something wrong. That's why they did that. That's why you're enduring this. That's exactly the wrong thing to do. And that's what Bildad was doing. But, you know, when we think about this, this is some of the this was what was passed down to him. And I think it's logical, though, you know, to say that, you know, it makes it clean to say, well, if it happened, it's God's justice, you're doing something wrong. And that's where Bildad was at, and he was saying that. He was saying that he deserved it. And we can do this, like I was saying, you know, and I think sometimes we can try to find reasons things happen because it makes us feel safe. When sometimes, you know, things happen in life that cause people to suffer, and we just need to be there for them and try to help them through the tragedy. Here, brother, let me get you the mic. I think it's still hot, so go for it.
I really appreciate your observation, okay, about it makes us feel safe. But I also think sometimes we're just digging, okay? Maybe mm-hmm. It's just curiosity, okay? There's more reasons than that, okay? Sometimes we just feel like if we can get an explanation, okay, and maybe that's part of what you're saying about just avoiding things.
Yeah,
but like, you'll see people, okay, faithful members of the church who raise their children in the church and taught their children the truth of God's word, and the kids go bad in a big way. And what's the first thing everybody wants to know?
You want to know how it happens so you don't do the same thing. You're absolutely right.
You know, and as you said, okay, it's like there we live in a fallen world, okay, and things just go wrong. And so sometimes, okay, that whole trying to dig for an explanation, maybe it's not so much just a matter of trying to feel safe, okay? It's just that curiosity, that what really happened kind of thing.
No, I think that's a good point. And, you know, let me be clear, you know, and really, I didn't really, you know, focus on that enough. And my main point there is the lack of, you know, being able to empathize for comfort's sake for somebody in doing that digging, is totally natural to go for that. And it's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, of course, because you want to know. We do need to unpack certain things to where you want to know if somebody goes astray, you see their children, something you want to know, I don't want that to happen to my kids. And, or that tragedy befalls somebody, you don't want that to happen. I guess my main point is we never want it to get us to the point where we don't empathize or want to or keep people at a distance from to help them work through a tragedy. And because sometimes in that feeling safe, we can then say, well, okay, I didn't, you know, I don't know, I didn't buy a kid a car at their 16th birthday, and so that's what did it. Since I didn't spoil my kid rotten, I'm good. And that was the only thing I was kind of getting at with that. But, you know, because we do want to, you know, make sure that, because I'm, as an engineer, it's all about process. You want to see what the process is and try to make sure you can recreate the good events and things like that. But Bildad clearly isn't empathizing with Job. And we need to learn from that. We need to be able to empathize with the person suffering. Because if we you know, we don't want to put any blame or burden on them in the sense that you know you're suffering because of this. It's just, and I think most people would never imagine doing that. I just think that's the thing we can learn from Bildad, though, too, because that's essentially what Bildad was doing. And we look in, you know, we also think about our New Testament examples. We look at Galatians 6, in 6 verse 10, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those of the household of faith. We're going to reach out to those that are suffering. We're going to go after them, and we're going to, you know, do our best to comfort them in their struggles when they're going through the dark days. But, you know, but ultimately, the fact that we have to suffer is because we live in a fallen world. And we want to be made fit for heaven someday. So let's continue on and look at some of, we've got a little bit of time left. So hang on a second, let me get my papers here organized. I had one little more thing I wanted. Well, I lost it. Well, I guess I don't need it. Oh, that's okay. So Job responds to Bildad in chapters 9 and 10. And then Bildad's speech is going to continue. He's going to continue his speech or his second speech in chapter 18. And so let's just, well, let's spend a little bit of time in chapter 9 and then go on to 18. So. Then Job answered and said, "Truly I know it is so, but how can a man be righteous before God? If one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him in one time out of a thousand. God is wise in heart and mighty in strength. He who has hardened himself against him and prospered, he who removes mountains and they do not know, when he overturns him in his anger, he shakes the earth out of his place and its pillars tremble. He commands the sun and it does not rise. He seals off the stars. He alone spreads out the heavens and treads on the waves of the sea. He made the Bear, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south. He does great things past finding out, yet wonders, yes, wonders without number." I did look, and this is, I think that's the only, there's only two times that are mentioned. Those constellations are mentioned in the Bible, and those are mentioned here in Job, right here in his response here, and I think later in the book too, which is interesting. I did look into what the chambers of the south were. I couldn't really get really a lot of clarification on that, but I do think it's neat. There's a lot of scientific foreknowledge in Job, which I think is wonderful that we can see that there's a divine author here. But, you know, I love how he is just going back to how awesome God is and how, you know, he did kind of get re-anchored on, you know, just God's sovereignty here. And, you know, that's where, as you know, as I, in any type of struggle that I have, and you know, and when we go through hard things in life, you think about how it's making us better as Christians, helping us look for ways that we can find good in it. And there's times where, you know, when you've undergone some serious struggle or tragedy or hardship in your life, later on, you see ways you can use it for the Lord in terms of helping a brother or sister who's also suffering through the same thing. And, you know, God didn't cause those things, but you know, he may have allowed them for those particular moments in his providence. We will never know, just like Job never knew, how things occurred in his lifetime. But let's continue in chapter I wanted to read chapter 18, some excerpts in chapter 18, and then just kind of hit chapter 20, 25 briefly, since that's a short thing, and then we will be dismissed. So turn over to chapter 18 with me. And then Bildad the Shuhite answered, "How long till you put an end to words, gain understanding, and afterward we will speak? Why are we counted as beasts and regarded as stupid in your sight? You who tear yourself in anger, shall the earth be forsaken for you, or shall the rock be removed from its place? The light of the wicked indeed goes out, and the flame of his fire does not shine." Here he's going into again, I mean, clearly you are wicked, and he's going to go into all the reasons that things that happen to wicked people. "The light is dark in his tent, and his lamp beside him is put out. The step of his strength are shortened, and in his counsel cast him down. For he is cast into a net by his own feet, and he walks into a snare. The net takes him by the heel, and the snare lays hold of him. A noose is hidden for him on the ground, and a trap for him in the road. Terrors frighten him on every side and drive him to his feet. His strength is starved, and destruction is ready at his side. It devours patches of his skin. The firstborn of death devours his limbs. He is uprooted from the shelter of his tent, and the parade before him, the king of terrors. They dwell in his tent who are none of his. Brimstone is scattered on his dwelling. His roots are dried out below, and his branch withers above. The memory of him perishes from the earth, and he has no name among the renowned. I mean, he's going after him, and he's talking about the consequences of this and how his name is going to be, you know, just essentially blotted out. He is driven from the light into darkness and chased out of the world. He has neither son nor posterity among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. Those in the west are astonished at his day, and those in the east are frightened. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked, and this is the place of him who does not know God. So he goes after Job, and Job spoke some things before this, so he's going after that and rebukes him. But then he's also just going into this just big tirade of what happens to the wicked. And he's doubling down on this, you're wicked, Job, you're wicked. And he just continues to go after him for those reasons. So then Bildad has one more speech in chapter 25, which I just find is interesting, where he finally ends up, and this is in response to Job, and Job's speeches. And then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, "Dominion and fear belong to him. He makes his place, he makes peace in his high places. Is there any number to his armies? Upon whom does his light not rise? How then can man be righteous before God? Or how can he be pure who is born of a woman? If even the moon does not shine and the stars are not pure in his sight, how much less man who is a maggot and son of man who is a worm?" I just find this shift just really interesting in his third speech. He talks about how God is sovereign. And, you know, is there any number to his armies? And just the mighty power of God and how he can accomplish his will. He then acknowledges that man's a sinner. And so then, you know, he acknowledges that this, but the implication that Job causes suffering, you know, is just, it's really kind of the back, the parallel that I just don't understand. You know, he understands that how then can a man be righteous before God? But then there's a level of unrighteousness that would cause this level of suffering that Job's enduring. It's just, I feel like though his words are few at this point, he's kind of at a loss for words. And so that's where Bildad kind of leaves it in his third speech. I'd like to open it up for comments. Anybody you want to say or add anything to this? Because I don't have anything else prepared for our study tonight. I do appreciate the comments. Yes, go ahead, Mark. If you're here, I got you. No, thank you.
I think it's interesting how many things there are that are references to the coming of Christ. Okay, how can a man be righteous? Well, without the blood of Christ, you can't. Okay, when Job says, "I know my Redeemer lives, and on the last day." So it's just interesting, okay, it's like as we're reading about this in the patriarchal age, okay, how many things there are. And we, looking back, can see, okay, with the completed revelation of Scripture, the answers to those questions. And it's just kind of cool.
Yes, I mean, somebody I'm sure is going to get into, you know, the foreshadowing there. Like, I know that my Redeemer lives. The fact that he understands that there's more than just this life, too. And that he does have a Redeemer, and that he will be redeemed in the life to come. And so it is fascinating thinking about Job and his perspective, and how he constantly is wishing for God to just end his suffering as he's going through these speeches, as he's responding to his friends and what he's enduring.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.